Your faith has made you well. Once again this morning, the release or the action of the divine seems to turn on issues of faith. We are in a section of Mark's gospel where great works of power are being manifested. Last week we were in the boat with Jesus, and he was asleep in the stern, and they awoke him, and he spoke to the storm, and it was calmed. And he turned almost to chastise the disciples and said, "Have you still no faith?" And in a story that is actually skipped in our lectionary at this time, the next scene is Jesus and the Gerasene demoniac, the man who is possessed of legions of demons. In that colorful story, Jesus casts out the demons, and the man is made well. And now we have a story within a story this morning, both of a healing of a woman with a debilitating illness and the raising from death of a child. And again, these turn on issues of faith. Next week, we will be in Jesus' hometown, where mighty works and healings are not possible because they lack faith. So what is it this faith is exactly? Is it a kind of confidence? Is it trust? Do we have it like a substance? And do we have enough of it? Isn't that often the question that we need to have enough faith? So let's look at the story this morning and see what kind of faith these characters have. Because it begins, like many healing stories, with Jairus, the leader from the synagogue, coming and kneeling at Jesus' feet to plead for his dying child. Now this in itself is a bit of a shock. After all, the leaders of the synagogue are not Jesus' friends. We know two chapters before that he's had a showdown with them in the synagogue on the Sabbath when the man with the withered hand comes forth and Jesus heals him on the Sabbath. And this is a source of some humiliation for the leaders of the synagogue because they plot to kill him after that. Yet, here we are two chapters later and Jairus, a leader of the synagogue, is coming to Jesus. So that tells us something about him. Tells us something about his desperation. Because he was probably a witness, or at least he'd heard about this power, and his child is dying. And he comes and publicly begs Jesus to come and lay hands on my little daughter, that she might be healed. It's hard not to relate to the despair and the willingness of a parent to do anything to save their child. That's what this is. This is anything. His position, his face in the public, he is begging Jesus to come. And Jesus responds, and they go. And right away, the story changes and it shifts. And we are in the head of a woman. And we have a little story of her. She has been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. And it says she spent all of her money on physicians and she has endured much, but she is no better. In fact, she's gotten worse. We know quite a lot based on that description. That she had money for physicians suggests that she was a person of status. There was no free health care in the ancient world. And she spent all of her money on physicians. And given the texts that we know about what kind of treatment she probably received, she endured much at the hands of these physicians. And she grew no better. In fact, she grew worse. So not only has she got this debilitating illness that's gone on for 12 years, but she seems to be alone. And so likely the fact that she cannot bear children has led to her being dismissed for childlessness was grounds for divorce. And when a woman did not have a child, it was her fault, not the man's. She was dismissed. So likely she's lost her place in society, her ability to bring forth life. And added on top of that, she's now perpetually defiled. She's in a state of uncleanness because the purity codes of the Old Testament describe her as being unclean in this condition, which is perpetual for her. And so she's outside and shunned. And so we can imagine her pale and exhausted and fragile. Her clothes are bloodstained. She doesn't smell very good. And she has a bold plan. She's going to go through this crowd, this paparazzi around Jesus, and she's going to touch his cloak. And we hear inside of her, she believes that if she just touches his cloak, that she will be healed. Literally to be saved. And so this is what she does. And this is no small risk. I mean, her uncleanness is contagious. Pushing and jostling with other people. And yet she succeeds. She touches Jesus' cloak, and it says the power flows out of him, and she felt in her body that she was healed. Now, this is one of those parts of the story where the power flowing out of Jesus, I think in our age of electricity, it's not hard to sort of imagine Jesus as sort of like a divine outlet. And you plug in, and the power flows out. Nothing he can do. And he turns and he says, "Who touched me?" And it's kind of a moment of some comedy in the fact that he's in this paparazzi. Let's face it, these works of power are being told far and wide, and people are coming to see. They want to see these works of power. Maybe he'll do something crazy. Maybe he'll heal somebody. Who knows what's going on? I've heard his family thinks he's nuts. So in the midst of this pushing and jostling, Jesus says, "Who touched me?" It's now the disciples' turn to be outraged and to say, "What are you talking about? It's all we can do to move anywhere around here. And you ask, who touched me?" But we are privy to this other layer where we know what has been received. And that's just it. It's not that Jesus is sort of a divine power source. Jesus is the focused center of the gift of God's self in the world. And this is a longing for relationship, a longing for the gift to be received. And we know in this gospel that it is not being received. It is not being understood. And there's an enormous amount of frustration to having this great gift, which all around you, everyone needs, and no one receives. So when he turns and says, "Who touched me?" he has found someone who is ready to receive this gift. And she falls at his feet and in fear and trembling tells him the whole truth. So then he really does do something crazy, because in public he's now going to address a woman, and on top of that, a woman who is unclean. And he's going to say, "Daughter, you are my daughter, my kin. Your faith has made you well." Jesus responds to human suffering and steps across bounds of convention and social taboo and says to the woman, "Daughter, your faith has made you well." And interestingly, with those words, the scene dissolves and we return to the other daughter, the little daughter that is at home dying. And we hear the news that in fact she has died. Bother the teacher no longer. But Jesus says, "Do not fear, only believe." And so they go to Jairus' house, to his 12-year-old daughter, where once again what we have at risk is not just her life, at age 12, you are now marriageable. We may miss the fact that she is right on the edge of becoming betrothed and bearing children for the community. So once again, this 12 that links the two women has to do with not just their life, but their role in this society to bring forth life and perpetuate the community. Because in this world, life is not given. And we kind of miss that in a world of 9 billion people, or 7 billion. But this sort of sense that we have so many. Jesus goes in with the mother and father and takes the little girl's hand, which again, we may not realize is one of the strictest taboos, the touching of the dead, and says, "Rise up." And certainly for those who read Mark's gospel, this "rise up" is a foreshadowing, certainly, of the resurrection and of the return to life which the community hopes for. This is the only resuscitation in Mark's gospel. There is no Lazarus. So what's this faith? Does it seem like these people are coming to God in surety and in certainty, asking for what they rightly deserve? That they have this quality of belief that can rest from God's hands in their time of need? It seems more like the opposite of that, that they actually come empty-handed, that they come ready, they come in a stance of surrender. And I think we just need to widen our understanding of faith, because so often it's a sense that we don't have enough, and yet I think we're being called and reminded in this gospel that in fact it's just the opposite. We need to come in hope, in the face of hopelessness, ready to receive God. Because this story is about God's concern for human suffering. We know that God answers when sufferers come and say, "We need help." And we believe that our faith and connection to God means the final victory over sickness and death. It does not mean we will be spared the storm, the demonic, sickness, the death of loved ones, but it does mean that they will not have the final word, that our relationship and faith will transcend that. And so the next time we're encouraged to have faith, I want you to think about your sense of readiness, your sense of surrender. When you have faith, are you ready?